step through the global window, alternating Thursday evenings for a trip around the world through the FM ethers of WUSB 90.1 FM. I'm Chris, and I'll be your host on the Global Rhythms program every other Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in and expand your musical horizons on Global Rhythms on WUSB Stony Brook.
A little taste of some of the other things you might be able to hear on this radio station, WUSB in Stony Brook, where the time is 6 o'clock p.m. on a Tuesday. We all know that means it's time for Off the Wall. Of course, what we don't know is what this hour will bring us. I'm as much in the dark as anyone else, so let's just hop on the train and see where it takes us. Our phone number, 631-632-WUSB. For those of you without letters, 631-632-9872. And we'll be taking phone calls, hopefully, later on. I'd really like to take some phone calls. We haven't done enough of that in this program, and I guess that's my fault because I don't take the phone calls. I know. Last week we had a few extras. I think the problem is we start taking them too late and then we run out of time and we can't take them. The poor person that comes on after us has to take them and, well, you know, that's not always the way it should work out. So if you have something to say to us based on what we say to you, then by all means call us. We'll try to take phone calls maybe around half past the hour. How's that? Should be enough time for everybody to call in. Something I'd like for somebody to do is to explain something to me. Actually, explain anything to me. That's always a good thing. But in this particular case, I really am in need of an explanation as to just what in God's name is going on with the political system in this country. I mean, you know, it's nothing new. It's the same system we've had for a while, but I just don't understand it. Maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I just don't see what everybody else is seeing. But I've talked to a bunch of other people. Either they're stupid, too, or a lot of people don't understand what's going on. What I'm talking about is what we witnessed, the spectacle, as it were, that we witnessed last night on all of our TV sets coming out of Iowa. Now, I'm not talking about Herman Munster winning. You know, that's pretty scary. I don't know. John Kerry scares me. I don't know why he scares me. He just does. I see that face. I see it coming at me. It just, horror movies. But regardless, I'd vote for him in a flash over George W. Bush, if it came down to it. If he's the candidate, if he's the person that has the chance to beat George W. Bush, I will vote for this guy. Okay, I would vote for Lieberman. I would vote for two Liebermans over a Bush. I would. Yeah, I know. I know what people are saying. How do you know he's not going to do something even worse? Well, that's just it. You don't. It's a crapshoot. You don't know what you're going to get. But by getting rid of the thing that has caused so many problems, you're sending a very important message that can serve as kind of a warning to the next person. Don't do that again. Don't start Homeland Security and have color coding of the conditions and take away people's rights and make prison camps in foreign countries and start wars in various places. You know, it's a little message saying don't do that. That's what you do. And yeah, you may elect somebody that messes it up even worse. But let's give them a chance, you know? Anyway, so Kerry's the big winner yesterday. And, yeah, he frightens me. They all kind of frighten me in a way, you know. John Edwards, where did this guy come from? You know, all of a sudden, John Edwards is one of the front runners. Okay, he looks like one of my gym teachers from high school. I don't understand, you know, he's from North Carolina, but all of a sudden, whammo, he's popular, when 2 weeks ago, he was one of the people lagging. Okay, so, you know, he scares me a lot less than Kerry does. But the surprise, the person who scared me, I think, the most, was Dean. Did you see him last night? Oh, my God. He was freaking out. I mean, he came in third place. He came in a distant third place. He had, 18% of the vote, as opposed to Kerry having 38 and Edwards having 32. Actually, those are the figures I have with 93% reporting. Okay, I had an old printout here. All right, so he's not exactly, you know, winning. I wouldn't call that winning. But looking at him, it's like a football coach about to take on, about to play the Super Bowl. I was afraid he was going to start hitting people. Just, if you get a chance, look at the video of Dean last night. And we're going to go to Michigan, and we're going to go to Arizona, and we're going to go to Hawaii. It just, I was afraid. When was he going to stop, you know? At least he didn't say Iraq. That's what the guy tonight's going to say. But we'll get to that later. Okay, so what don't I understand? They all scare me. Okay, fine. That's easy to understand. What I don't understand is the logic behind people like Gephardt. Now, Gephardt came in fourth place. He had 11%. All right, he came in fourth place with 11%, and guess what he did today? He cried on TV and dropped out of the race. Yep, that's what happened. This is the part I don't understand. And, you know, I love people from Iowa. I do. We have people from Iowa who listen to this show. People from West Des Moines who listen to this show. And regular Des Moines, too. But who cares what people in Iowa think? I mean, they're one state. I don't expect people in Idaho to care what people on Long Island think. It shouldn't affect them in any way, but look at what's happening. A relatively small portion of people in one state. We only, you know, talking, I don't know, 100,000 people voted? I don't know how many people actually participated. Certainly not everybody. Now, what these people have said, what these people have done, how they have cast their ballots, as it were, and that's another thing which I'll get to, that's influencing people in other parts of the country. That made the Gephardt drop out of the race. The fact that he came in fourth place in Iowa. Now, supposing everybody else in the country loves you. Supposing people in New Hampshire will go crazy over you and people in Iowa just don't get it. What, you're not going to give them the chance? You're just going to drop out, give up? You know, it's like, I equate this with having a championship playoff game before the season even begins. Or maybe even giving up the game 5 minutes into it. People who win in Iowa do not always win the presidency. I'm not even sure what the percentage is. So I don't understand the weight that is carried here. I don't understand the whole system at all. I don't understand why we have to do it this way. Why is this state-by-state thing? Why not just have, you know, a national referendum? If you're going to have to stick to the parties, which I'm against to start with, because I'm not a part of a party, I don't get to vote until November. And then it's down to two people, neither one of which I've had any say in. That's not fair. But regardless, if you're going to do it that way, why not do it nationwide? That way you have a realistic result. What you have here, this is what all the candidates were complaining about. On election night, they get very angry when the TV networks have exit polls in eastern states and kind of give projected results. They get angry at that. They say that affects the people on the West Coast. If they find out that a candidate is winning big on the East Coast, they're going to say, well, you know, he doesn't need my vote. I'm going to stay inside and, you know, watch Survivor. And then that affects the result on the West Coast, and sometimes it could affect the election. How is this not doing the exact same thing in slow motion? You know, we have people in Iowa voting. People here in New York have no say whatsoever, but yet we can't vote for Dick Gephardt now because of the people in Iowa. We will never have that opportunity. Yeah, finally the gravity of the situation hits. So if somebody can please call later on and explain it to me, explain why it works this way, I would be oh so happy. I really would. Okay, and now as far as the casting of ballots. Oh boy. Iowa has a caucus system. All right, it's not a primary. Do you know what that means? It means you don't have a secret ballot. That's what it means. You go into a room with a bunch of other Iowans, and I guess they're your neighbors and friends, people you know. They're people from your area. And you meet with them for anywhere between an hour and 3 hours, and you debate. Oh, it sounds great. Yeah, wonderful. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you support Al Sharpton, right? And you live in Iowa, okay? Now, odds are that's not going to go over too well. And you have to announce it to the people around you. If you survive that, then you have to convince them that they must vote for this person too. And if you fail to do that, he gets nothing. Zero. Anything under 15%, you must pick another candidate. That's how it works. So how in the world can somebody possibly overcome any kind of odds and get any kind of showing whatsoever? How can people voice their true opinions if they're afraid to voice those true opinions? So think of it this way. All it takes is a bunch of people with leather jackets, okay, you get one per precinct or whatever they call it, and he goes in there to each caucus, each gathering of people, and he threatens them. And he says, you vote for the person I want you to vote for, or I am going to kick your ass in the parking lot after this is over. And, you know, elderly farmers in Iowa will probably be easily intimidated by these young punks in leather jackets. They don't want any trouble, so they'll do what they say. Yeah, I know, it's probably illegal. They probably have all kinds of rules against us. But the point is, there are all kinds of little subtle ways you can intimidate people. You may not need the leather jackets. Is it any different than not voicing any support whatsoever for Al Sharpton because you know how that's going to be received? In a secret ballot, you can vote for whoever you want to. And if all these people are secret Al Sharpton supporters, you're going to see that in the results. The way this system is set up, you will never see it. And that is how the rest of the election is laid out. The results in Iowa, they count for something. That's what I don't get. What do they count for? Okay, so that's what's going on there. And again, somebody can call us up later on, maybe about 631-632-9872. Please explain it to me, because I'm a bit thick as far as that goes. Oh, look at this. I've complained about the teletype machine before, but this, I just wish you could see this. What I'm basically trying to do now is read the impression that the dot matrix printer, yes, we still have a dot matrix printer, that it made on the paper, because there's virtually no ink. I don't know where the ribbon is. If I did, I would take a stab at trying to change it, but I don't think this has been changed in a few years. I'm going to try to read this. If I sound like a moron, I'm sorry, but I'm just trying to make out each letter here. Aides say President Bush will again make the case for the man in a for the war in Iraq, I'm sorry, in his State of the Union speech tonight. He plans to argue that the U.S. made the right decision in going to war, even though inspectors haven't found the weapons of mass destruction he cited in last year's speech. Okay, well, that wasn't too bad, actually. Yeah, he's going to do that tonight. That starts at 9 o'clock, I believe. And boy, am I looking forward to that. You know, I'm being sarcastic there. The State of the Union is the biggest waste of time. You know why? Because no matter what, this guy could go out and stab puppies and run over kittens with SUVs, and yet he'd still get 45 minutes of applause. Now, 45 separate applause breaks, or whatever they call the thing. No matter what the president does, he's always the most popular person in that room, and everybody's always applauding. Doesn't matter. We don't have any real dissidents that will boo or show some form of protest. Nobody has that kind of guts, especially in the House and Senate. So all you're going to see is a guy giving a speech and being applauded every 15 seconds. See if I'm wrong. And does this guy deserve to be applauded every 15 seconds? I mean, really? Sure, by some people who agree with what he's doing, fine, but I get the distinct impression not everybody agrees with what he's doing, and they will be applauding along with the rest. That's how it works. Anyway, I have a piece of paper here that does have ink, and basically they say that his speech is designed to rebut attacks from the Democratic candidates for president while defending his decision to invade Iraq. They say Bush will address the fact that no weapons of mass destruction have been found in Iraq and that U.S. troops continue to be killed there. Bush will make the case that the United States faces a real threat of another terrorist attack. Okay, so maybe he can scare us into supporting him. That's really about the only way it's going to work out. He's been practicing his address. So he practiced it all day yesterday, running through it twice in front of his advisors with the help of a teleprompter. Oh, wow. Would I love to be in charge of that teleprompter? I gave a speech once to the graduating class here at Stony Brook a number of years ago. And I didn't have a teleprompter. I memorized it. I had the paper in front of me, but you only can look at that once every few seconds. You have to pretty much have it in your head. But Bush, he's got a teleprompter in front of him. It's going to be probably telling him when to frown and when to smile and things like that. Oh, it would be so cool to hack into that, but that's probably terrorist talk right there. So let's move away from that. What else do we have here? Families of British and French prisoners held by the United States at Guantanamo Bay have criticized their governments over the handling of the detainees. They're criticizing the British and French governments. Actually, before I get into this story, I just want to point out something, and maybe people can tell me if I'm the only person that sees this. But I just called it Guantanamo Bay. Every time I see a news article about this, whether it's on CNN or MSNBC or Fox, they always refer to it in the headline as Gitmo. Gitmo. G-I-T-M-O. Kind of like Newspeak way of saying Guantanamo Bay, or just Guantanamo. Now, does anybody else refer to it this way, or is it the media just trying to make up a new word? I've never heard anybody say Gitmo in real life. It's like they're trying to test this out and make it catch, so that we all walk around saying Gitmo instead of Guantanamo Bay. I like saying Guantanamo Bay. I think it sounds much better. Never mind that, you know, it's a horror for many people right now. But it's just kind of a weird thing how language can be manipulated. And I could be wrong on this, too. Maybe it has always been called Gitmo, but I only see it in these headlines. Never see it anyplace else. And it's so aggressive, too, the way they are trying to push it. Maybe it's because they just can't fit it, and they need to save space, but it seems to be universal among the media. Anyway, nine Britons and six Frenchmen are among the 660 people who have been held at the U.S. naval base on Cuba for more than 2 years without being charged or having access to legal assistance. Doesn't that kind of strike you as a little weird? Why haven't they been charged? They were taken into custody over 2 years ago. You'd think by now we'd have some idea of why. I'd imagine how they feel being taken into custody and not having any charges leveled against them. Many of these people are prisoners from the war in Afghanistan. Of course, we say they're not prisoners of war, so they're not. We make the rules. What a world. Anyway, the U.S. government has been interrogating the detainees and deciding whether they will face military tribunals or be released. Military tribunals. I wonder if Bush is going to say that word in his speech tonight. Or they could be released. Now, if they get released, what do they get for being in custody for over 2 years without having any charges filed against them? That's what I'd like to know. I mean, I'll tell you, if some foreign government put me in custody for over 2 years and then just released me and said, okay, be on your way, I don't think I'd be willing to just do that. You know? I think maybe I'd be harboring some resentment that could go on for a very long time. UK Prime Minister Tony Blair recently said he expected the detainees' legal status to be clarified within weeks, but warned they would not be allowed back in Britain if they posed a terror risk. Makes no sense. If they were released, supposedly they were being released because they posed no threat. Are they going to have two separate hearings, two separate trials in each country? I don't know. Azmat Beg, whose son Mozam is being held in Guantanamo Bay, described the disappointment he felt after a recent meeting with the UK Foreign Office. I'm very sorry to say that we have been to the Foreign Office, but the response we got was very unacceptable. I came out very disappointed, full of loss. My son has no human rights, nothing. He's absolutely right. He has no human rights. We don't even know their names. Imagine you know somebody down there, or you know that someone's down there, or you just suspect someone's down there. What do you do now? How do you find out? How do you verify that person is there? How do you see that person? How do you make sure that person gets legal aid? And you think it's only foreigners? No, no. The president can say, as in the case of the dirty bomb suspect, that Padilla guy, he can say U.S. citizens are enemy combatants and send them on down there too, where they'll get treated exactly the same way. And yet, people will applaud tonight. I just don't get it. I just do not get this at all. The families of the six French prisoners being held say they have had no assistance from their government. Hassine Onsai, the French Guantanamo Bay prisoners' representative, said to CNN, so far the French government has done nothing. Human rights watchdog group Amnesty International has accused the United States of depriving the detainees of basic human rights. The accusations are disputed, of course, by the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. Amnesty says the U.S. government has arbitrarily imprisoned the detainees. Other violations the group has listed include prolonged solitary confinement, heavy shackling, and lack of adequate exercise. And there have been reports of several suicide attempts by Guantanamo detainees. And the fight for freedom continues. And what else do we have here? In Iraq, the elections. Elections are going to be coming up. You think it's going to be fun here? Oh, where do you see what's in the agenda for Iraq? Here's the deal. The people there want to have direct elections. These are the people we supposedly freed from the yoke of Saddam Hussein. But we don't want them to have free elections, at least not so fast. We want them to have their elections in December of 2005. Yeah, that's when they can actually have a voice in their government. Until then, we're going to appoint their government for them. Well, guess what? That's not going over too well over there. There have been demonstrations by tens of thousands of people in the streets of Iraq and various cities demanding that they decide where their country is going to go, demanding a voice. There's a protest yesterday. It saw thousands upon thousands of Iraqis marching through the capital, many clasping each other's hands above their heads. Not quite sure what that means, but it looked pretty cool. And they shouted, yes, yes, to elections. No, no, to selection. Wasn't that nice of them to chant in English so they could get that little rhyme for our benefit? Anyway, the Shias are the ones who are demonstrating the most. They're the people that were being repressed under Saddam Hussein. Those are the people we're supposedly doing this for. And guess who their leader is? The top Shia cleric, Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. So, we have a situation where the top clerics in Iraq may be battling us to get control of their country. And you know that's not going to turn out too well for us. It's a real mess. It was not thought out. It was not thought out at all. And now we have to try to figure out how to fix it. We're trying to get the UN back into it. Isn't that nice? The UN. The organization that we just walked right past, did what we wanted to anyway, acted a bit surprised when they decided to leave after being blown up. Now we want them back. We want them to take over the election plans. It's almost comical. And what else? You hear about the demonstrations against the headscarf bans in France. Muslim protests have been taking place throughout that country, as well as other countries, against a French bill which would ban headscarves from state schools. There are up to 5,000 protesters rallying in Paris, mainly Muslim women in scarves. President Jacques Chirac announced a ban on overtly religious symbols in schools last month after an official report into state secularism. Many of France's 5 million Muslims see it as an attack on their religious and human rights. Apart from the Islamic headscarf, the ban, scheduled to be enacted before the next academic year, would also affect the Jewish skullcap, big crucifixes, and Sikh turbans. You know, I just cannot follow that logic at all. I really cannot follow it. I mean, I'm the person that thinks every organized religion ever created is a big waste of time. And I think it's silly to walk around with various headscarves and skull caps and crosses and whatnot. But it's who people are. And whether or not you're into it, that's beside the point. There's a big difference between praying in school, having the school mandate something religious, and passing it down to the students who have no real say, and having people express their individuality, which may include their favorite rock band, it may include their favorite religion, it may include some political slogan, who knows? It's people being themselves. And yeah, you can say, oh, these women are being forced to wear these headdresses. Well, guess what? You know, I know a lot of women who are forced to wear dresses. Yeah, they grow up in a traditional household where they don't, dress in any other way. Are we going to make some kind of law forbidding that in certain places? You can't protect people by forcing them to act in a particular way. You protect them by educating them and giving them alternatives and options. What this is doing is making things a lot more confrontational. That's really kind of sad, actually. Anyway, an estimated 5,000 people rally in Paris, 3,500 marched in Lille, 1,800 in Marseille, 1,500 in Mulhouse, and hundreds in other French cities, as well as outside the French embassies in Beirut and Amman, Jordan, and in Palestinian territories as well. And you know what? 70% of the French people support this ban on any kind of religious symbol in schools. I don't know. I think it's going to cause more problems than it solves. And here's another problem that's been caused. An explosion has destroyed the parked car of a newly appointed French prefect of Algerian origin in an apparent attack, which is a high-profile blow to efforts to integrate France's minorities. On last Wednesday, the French government appointed Issa Demouche, prefect of the Eastern Jura area, a post that includes regional responsibility for law and order. So, you see this, some hostility already that's being manifested by this ridiculous conflict. Anyway, the vehicle was empty at the time of the blast. No one was hurt, according to the police sources. This attack targeted the new prefect personally and the symbol that he represents. That's according to the state prosecutor of the area. Now, interesting thing, that they refer also in this story to the ban on headdresses or headscarves in French schools. Many French politicians and voters support the planned law as a bulwark against Islamist influence among Muslim immigrants. It's all about influencing them and getting them to go in the right direction. But listen to this. The center-right government hopes the headscarf ban will prevent the far-right National Front from cashing in on racial strife in regional elections in March. Well, there you go. There's your real reason. To placate racists. Says it right there. Prevent the far-right National Front from cashing in on racial strife. And many on the far-right resent immigrants taking influential posts.
pretty frightening. And
let's read one more story, then maybe we'll take some phone calls at 631-632-WUSB. This is a crazy story. I don't know if it's gotten much publicity in American media, as I watch very little of it these days. This is from BBC. Israel has called on the Swedish government to dismantle an art exhibit featuring a Palestinian suicide bomber, which it says is an incitement to kill. Did you hear about this story? It's insane. On Friday, you couldn't make this kind of stuff up. On Friday, the Israeli ambassador to Stockholm was ejected from a museum for vandalizing the exhibit. Ambassador Zvi Mazel said the work, which has a boat floating in a pool of red liquid, was a call for genocide. How do you suppose he knew it was a call for genocide? Did something click in his mind or something? I mean, how do you know what the intent of a piece of artwork is? Isn't that the purpose of art, to kind of interpret it on your own and people come away with different impressions? But this guy apparently read the mind of the person who created it. However, its Israeli-born creator rejected the charge, saying the work had a message of openness and conciliation. Sweden's foreign ministry has summoned Mr. Mazel to give an explanation for his actions on Monday. He was expelled from Stockholm's Museum of Antiquities on Friday after he threw a spotlight at the exhibit. Called Snow White and the Madness of Truth, the installation features a photo of Hanadi Jaradat, a 29-year-old trainee lawyer who blew herself up in 19 Israelis in a Haifa restaurant in October. The work is accompanied by a piece of Bach music entitled My Heart is Swimming in Blood. The installation was commissioned ahead of a conference on genocide to be held later in January. Does this genius think that maybe the conference on genocide is a how-to conference or something? It's really insane how some people leap to conclusions. It is impossible to justify the incitement and cultivation of hatred as shown in this exhibit in the name of freedom of expression. That's according to Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman David Serenger. The Swedish government cannot remain indifferent and should take steps to remove it. He defended the ambassador's physical attack on the installation, saying no Israeli could remain indifferent. Good God. Dror Filar, I'm sorry if I'm butchering these names, an expatriate Israeli artist who collaborated on the installation, who apparently is one of these Israelis who can remain indifferent, said Mr. Mazel had tried to stop free speech and free artistic expression. I'm absolutely opposed to suicide bombers, he added, as if he had to. The director of the museum, Christian Berg, said the installation would remain in place. You can have your own view of what this piece of art is all about, but it is never, never allowed to use violence, and it is never allowed to try to silence the artist. Thank God for countries like Sweden. Well, they still have a bit of sanity. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has praised his country's ambassador to Sweden for damaging an art exhibit. I called the Israeli ambassador to Sweden and thanked him for his stand against the growing wave of anti-Semitism. What an idiot! What a stupid idiot this guy is. How can you label something anti-Semitism when you don't even understand what it is? You know what that does? That just fosters all kinds of misunderstandings and hatred that was not there to start with. Anyway, I told him the government stands behind him on this issue. We've been witness to mounting anti-Semitism worldwide and in Europe particularly, and the phenomenon is getting worse. That's true. That's very true. And that's something that has to be dealt with. You don't deal with it by making things up, though. Anyway, the artist once again said that his work was not intended to glorify the suicide bomber, but to call attention to how weak people, left alone, can be capable of horrible things. That's kind of how I saw it, too, when I saw the picture of it. Pretty horrible. All right, our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Let's do our Tommy Chong tribute for tonight, which will be a quick one. Actually, I have to cue it up. Which one are we going to do tonight? Let's do the first one on this record. which is called, incidentally, Cheech and Chong. It's a record that came out in 1978. And I should warn you, the piece we're about to hear really isn't that funny, but we're going to play it anyway because it's history. And because we have to do something to let people know that Tommy Chong is still in prison for selling bongs on the internet. And we're going to play a piece that he collaborated with Cheech Marin. We're going to play a piece once a week until he's out. Again, our phone number, 631-632-9872. If you're calling already, stay on the line until after this piece is over.
Oh, good morning, J.R.
Good morning. Who we got in the studio today?
Studio B, Blind Melon Chitlin.
Blind Melon Chitlin, isn't that new British rock group?
Oh, no, J.R., that's the old blues singer that you signed the other day, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's the one we gave the $10 the bottle of booze and the hooker to, huh?
That's the one, J.R.
Yeah, well, let's get going. I feel like solid gold already.
Right, you are.
Is that him in the studio?
That's him.
All right, Mr. Chitlin! Mr. Chitlin! What? He ain't deaf, too, is he?
No, J.R., you have to push the switch forward.
Oh, yeah, I know. I just want to see if you knew. Listen, Mr. Chitlin! Mr. Chitlin, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
All right, baby. Hey, listen, Mr. Chitlin, can I call you by your first name?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Listen, now, Blind Baby, what we want to go for on this record is not just a blues record, but we want a document, an epic document depicting the struggle of the black people against the white devil slave masters. You got that? You got it? What the... What's the drummer's name? Johnny? Johnny! Want to give him a push there? Step on there, sir.
Yo.
Mr. Chitlin, can you hear me?
Yo.
All right, Blind Baby. Pay a little more attention now, huh?
Yo.
All right. So we want to start from the top, Blind Baby, and really cook, honey. All right, ready?
Yo.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, hit it! Oh, cut! Cut! Johnny, wanna find him his harmonica? Yeah, that's it. Put it in his hand there. Okay, Blind Baby, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, let's try it with a harmonica this time, okay, honey?
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take it from four and really burn, all right?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, cook!
Oh, God,
hold it! Cut! Now listen, Blind Baby, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, listen, what we want is a little more enunciating. The kids today are hung up on the lyrics. They like to listen to the words. I don't know why. But listen, baby, a little more enunciating, okay? We want a little bit more clear. You got that, baby?
Yeah.
All right, let's take it from the top now. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, hit it! Cut. Blind Baby. The thumping's coming through. So, hey, listen, can we get him to take off his shoes or something?
He already has his shoes off, J.R.
Ah, look like rubber boots to me. Okay, never mind, Blind Baby. All right, let's take it from the top again. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, burn! Baby, listen, I'm not too clear on the lyrics there that you just used, so let's go back, huh? Maybe it's my fault. Listen, I'll read you what I got, okay? Going downtown, gonna see my gal, gonna sing her a song, gonna show her my ding-dong. That's right, ding-dong. Blind Baby, what the hell's this ding-dong?
I think he's gonna show you, J.R.
All right, let me show you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ, will you look at the size of that thing? Hey, we'll never get that on the album cover. Probably play jump rope with it, though.
Okay. I guess that was kind of funny after all. That was Cheech and Chong from the Cheech and Chong self-titled record, which came out well after some of their other albums, Blind Melon Chitlin. And we will continue to play a Tommy Chong piece every week until he's released from prison. We'll show them. Okay, well, you know, it always happens. People call during the break, during when I'm playing something else, and then they abandon the phone while I'm talking. So, again, I'll give out the phone number, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. If you have something to add, something to say, an explanation of the caucus system, or anything else that you'd like to share with us, with the audience, the worldwide audience, please give a call. Country Code 1, we welcome calls from all over the world. We know people listen from all over the world. Some of you listen after the show is on, so obviously you can't call in then. But if you're listening live, give a call. Let's take a call here. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, can we ban 10-gallon hats?
Can we ban 10-gallon? Are they a religious symbol?
Well, I don't know. I just think it's a pretty lame fashion statement. I mean, it started out as like cowboys wearing them to protect themselves from the sun and the rain. And now these country and western artists actually wear them for like no reason. And think of all the explosives you could get tucked up into one
of
those.
That's true. That's very true. You know, I never thought they were for protecting them against certain. I just thought it was a fashion statement.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just imagining that, you know, the cowboy, like, you know, 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, they'd be out in the rain, blah, blah, blah. You know, that the thing actually had a function, but it doesn't function very well on the top of some country and western artist. Head.
It's funny though, when you travel, you just have to travel a little bit to the west. I'm not, where are you calling from?
I'm in middle of Suffolk County.
Okay, so you're local, but if you drive west and maybe just hit Pennsylvania, Ohio, all of a sudden you see people starting to walk around with these things on their heads.
I know, that's something we don't really see too often around here, unless you spend a lot of time at the airport or something.
Yeah, and you know, it's their way of life, and that's perfectly okay with me. I wouldn't think to say that because I'm not into this kind of a thing that you can't be into it as well. So, you know, I don't see how a headscarf really affects anybody unless you let it affect you.
Yeah, well, like you said before, it's like, what is it, to deter, you know, it's for always for political purposes, and, you know, it's just really ridiculous when you analyze the news and start, you know, do what very few people do, actually think about the news, and
yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm
just kidding around anyway. I don't really give a damn about that.
Can you explain the caucus system to me, please?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
I'm right, though. It doesn't make any sense, right?
I don't follow the caucuses too much.
Well, here's the thing, okay? Kerry won yesterday in Iowa.
Right.
Gephardt came in fourth place. Gephardt dropped out of the race today based on what some people in Iowa did. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, maybe he's running out of money.
Well, okay, but then maybe he shouldn't be campaigning in the first place. But he must know that it's more than just one state.
Right, if you don't have enough to go the whole route, why get in it at all?
Why think that Iowa represents the country?
Yeah.
Does Iowa? I mean, why not just have Iowa do the whole thing for us then?
No, you're right. You're right, and it's definitely hyped, and it's Iowa. You know, nothing against Iowa, but it's Iowa.
Imagine if Manhattan Island got to do this before anybody else.
Yeah.
All right, and somehow we were able to wield all this power from Manhattan. People would be complaining left and right, but because it's Iowa, oh, you know, nobody's going to touch that. And why is it always Iowa that's first? Why can't New York be first next time?
That's a good question. I don't know. You raise interesting points. And who would you ask, though? Who would know the answer?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. You have to take these things and do them yourself somehow. So,
but how did it start in Iowa?
I don't know. I think McGovern had something to do with it.
What's that?
I heard McGovern had something to do with it.
Oh, really?
I don't know how he did something like that. But I say let's start a political movement to make not just New York, but how about Long Island? Make Long Island the first place to decide who's going to be president. You know? Why not?
That would be interesting, the media spotlight on Long Island.
Yes, if we, you know, we don't have enough.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe if the media paid attention to Long Island, they'll see how much trash is everywhere. You ever notice that?
Yeah, are you talking about the human trash or the the real trash?
Well, the trash coming from the human trash. People who throw stuff out of their car. I mean, not to change the subject, but, you know, it really frustrates me when you drive around this place and there's just so much garbage everywhere. And there's no, like, litter campaign, unless you know of one.
No. Well, there's a campaign to litter, I think, but I don't think there's a campaign to stop littering.
It's like if you're sitting at a you know, a red light or something, just look out the window. There.
Yeah, a Hershey bar wrapper comes flying by and, you know.
And cups. And
cigarettes. People just throw cigarettes out. Lit cigarettes, you know.
Well, we could go on and on.
We could. But you know what? I'm not driving very much this week because my car is mired in the snow.
Are you buried?
Well, it's not my fault because, you know, the dunderhead is supposed to plow my neighborhood. Didn't do it on Sunday. Apparently took Sunday off. That was the only day you could plow because that's when it was above freezing.
Right.
It was also snowing. So then the next day everything froze over and now it's a sheet of ice. And not only that, but when he did finally plow, he plowed my car in. So it's going to be there for at least a week.
How are you getting around on Long Island?
Well, I've kind of turned into a nomad where I'm sort of going from place to place, getting rides from people, taking trains, which is going to be a nightmare in itself here on Long Island, and spending a lot of time in the city.
Yes.
So, you know, we have to make the most of our situations in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like the fact that there's snow on the ground. I like the fact that it's cold. Last week it was colder than I can remember it being in a long time, and it's cool.
Yeah, I kind of got excited about it, too, but then, you know, reality came crashing in. You know, the pipes froze and
but
you know,
you
stuff
get
like
used
that,
to it.
The inconveniences. But I really, man, it was more exciting than New Year's Eve. I was watching the temperature drop on the on the thermometer. It was like, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but it never got down to zero.
Uh-huh.
But I was celebrating anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, you get used to these situations. People say, oh, it's too cold. But, you know, after like a week of it, it's no longer the headline, and people are just going about their business, and they're better prepared.
Right.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take another call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Manuel. I just wanted to add to the State of the Union address topic.
Okay.
pardon me. Aides say he will lay out his presidential legislative priorities. This is from CNN.com.
Okay.
And the president will also tackle the issue of same-sex marriage.
Oh, he's going to tackle that, huh?
Yes. Ooh.
This is going to be good. Was he going to...
Declaring, as he's done before, that marriage should be between a man and a woman.
Well, we'll see how Barney Frank reacts to that.
Yeah, I cannot fathom. I just don't see what the problem is with same-sex marriage in this country.
Yeah, you know, someone has to explain to me how that hurts anybody.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're the straightest person on earth, and you're married to another straight person on earth, you know, of a different sex... How does the fact that somebody else doesn't share exactly what your values are in any way influence you or the people that you hang out with, unless those values are fragile to begin with?
I completely agree. I don't understand. You know, I just wanted to add this to the discussion. I know you only have 10 minutes left to get to some other calls. I just wanted to add that, you know, he's actually going to add this to the State of Union address. As if it's a massive issue for him.
I wonder why, though. I mean, it's not something that's going to gain him very many votes that he doesn't already have.
I agree.
I mean, all the people that are voting for him probably are against gay marriage to start with, so he doesn't need to get any more of those. He's just going to make other people angry, which I think is a great thing if he makes people angry.
Oh, I completely agree. I'd like to see him make people angrier.
Well, he's got a year. Let's see what he can do. And he may even have 5 years. All right, thanks for your call.
Okay.
And good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, my name is Carmelo. Before you said that you didn't know about Gitmo.
Yeah, Gitmo.
Yeah, right. I just want to say that I was in the Navy in 1968, and my ship, the USS America, made a shakedown cruise down there. So I was there in 68, and we called it Gitmo then.
Okay, so the military definitely calls it Gitmo.
Yes, the U.S. Navy.
Okay, it's just weird because I don't hear people... You know, in the normal day-to-day life, saying Gitmo, they say Guantanamo Bay. So I just was wondering if there's something the media had concocted.
Yeah, even today I still call it Gitmo.
Uh huh.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for the clarification.
Just wanted to clear that up.
Okay. Thanks for calling. 631-632 WUSB 631-632-9872. And you know, I know what happens. People fall off the switchboard because it times out. Just call right back. Simple. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? Let me turn the radio down.
Yes.
You were talking about that Sweden art exhibit?
Yeah, the art exhibit in Sweden.
And I was wondering, without having seen the exhibit, I'm thinking of 3rd of May, Goya. I'm thinking of Guernica, Picasso.
Uh-huh.
And these are very violent pictures, but they are in reaction to very violent situations. I don't remember them being, turned out, turned down, turned away.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering, without having seen this exhibit in Sweden, where the line comes between what's now being shown in Sweden, and a potential neo-Nazi exhibit and the rights that would protect a neo-Nazi organization from exhibiting something that I would particularly find extremely offensive.
Yeah, as I no doubt most of us would. I think the difference is that a neo-Nazi display would be advocating something pretty blatant and glorifying something that most of us find repellent.
Blatant, as far as I'm concerned, is an opinion. What you're doing is imposing an opinion on freedom. And, you know, what's blatant to you, obviously, is not to a bunch of neo-Nazis.
Yeah, okay, but if you have a display of some sort with a swastika or people saluting Hitler and things like that, it's going to obviously have a negative reaction. Whether the person has the freedom to do that in a museum, that's another discussion. Okay, but in this particular case, what we had was simply a person's face on a boat in a body of water of red. My point is, I just don't see how you can say what that means, what that intends.
Okay.
It's not so obvious.
To put it more on the side of something like 3rd of May Goya, a bunch of outstretched arms against a firing squad, or Guernica, which is Picasso masterpiece, against the brutal, the fascist brutality against a peaceful village in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
There is a line somewhere between is something that would be offensive, such as a neo-Nazi propaganda exhibit, and exhibits of protest against organized brutality,
mm-hmm.
Such as Guernica or 3rd of May, which are historically accepted by the art and political community. Where would you draw the line?
It's tough.
Blatant.
But I wouldn't draw the line anywhere near this particular exhibit, because this one seems to me to be something that leaves a lot in the eye of the beholder.
But if there was a line that was going to be drawn, I would expect it to be drawn by somebody just like you. Where would you draw the line?
That's a hard question to answer. It really is. I would draw the line at a point where something was just, there was no question about it, that this is either glorifying an existing regime or, you know, it turns into something that just is no longer art and is simply propaganda.
But the no question about it campaign, right now, Bush would say there's no question about our intervention.
I understand. Yeah, every person has a different place to put the line.
I understand, but somewhere, believe it or not, I'm with you,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also having trouble defining where that line would be. I would like to be able to prohibit artwork of a neo-Nazi nature, but I would like to protect artwork that is vulgar and informative.
Well, I don't know if you can necessarily prohibit artwork. I do think that neo-Nazi artwork would not be very popular and wouldn't be sponsored by very many museums to start with. I think once you start banning things, they become more of an issue of rebellion, and they actually become stronger as a result. Like, for instance, not to equate the two, but the headscarf issue, right now that has more support than it had when this whole thing started, and people are riled up against these kind of restrictions.
There's a level, a percentage of morbid, you know, interest.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, I'm just curious. I wanted to hate the artwork for what its description was. I wanted to love it because of your protection of it as expression. And yet, every time I use neo-Nazi artwork as the extreme, it can go too far.
Of course, yeah.
And
but I think it's going too far when you actually physically try to destroy something. I think that's, you know, that's not right.
Well, the presentation of the swastika doesn't necessarily have to destroy anything any more than the Confederate flag over the capital of South Carolina. But it offends to the bone too many people. I was wondering if maybe you could help hone in for your audience or whatever, a definition.
Okay, well, we're going to have to do this honing over the next couple of weeks because we're running out of time.
Very good.
All right, but people's thank you for calling. People's opinions, of course, are welcome. They can give us a call here, obviously, when we are taking calls. We might have time for one more if someone else wants to squeeze in. Or you can write to us, otw@2600.com, OTW meaning, of course, off the wall. And very interesting series of events in the news. And, you know, you can pretty much dive into this any time just by reading the most interesting sites on the net or watching international news instead of the crap they feed us here. You just got to look for it a little bit. Maybe you'll find something of interest, something that will get you impassioned one way or another. See if we can take another call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
This is Chris calling from Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, wow. That might be a record for us.
Yeah?
What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm just ringing up to say that every time I see a report on the media about the United States political system, I get very, very scared.
How do you think we feel? But it's good to know that people over there are paying attention. You know, to what,
yeah, well, I mean, well, my media outlet, my favorite media outlet is probably similar to your favorite one, BBC World. Actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is nobody in this country can get BBC World on their cable system. They can get a half hour maybe in the morning on PBS, but that's it. I get it 24 hours a day because I have a Canadian satellite dish.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky.
Everyone who gets pay TV, it's just part of the service here.
Yeah, the whole world gets it. You can be in Lebanon and be able to get this service. In our country, we can't get it. Go figure. But, you know, people here are, you know, they are interested in what's going on. They are intelligent. They're inquisitive. They want to know more. And, you know, it's a shame that more isn't provided.
Yeah, well, I mean, I find that, you know, when I sort of see... You know, in America, on the mainstream media, I get scared out of my mind. But when I listen to something like BAI or USB, I think there is an alternative out there, and quite a serious counterculture, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, well, we exist, and it's good to know people are out there listening. You listen to the two radio stations online?
Yeah, I've been listening to them for years, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you keep listening. We're kind of out of time now. But we'll be on Off the Hook tomorrow night and Off the Wall again next week. And, of course, continue listening to both these radio stations because you'll find all kinds of really good stuff on them.
Yeah, also, thanks for that photo album thing you're doing, actually. It's given me a few travel plans myself.
Cool. Okay, well, we're not finished yet. We're going to go back to Russia probably in the next week or two and finish it off. But I'm glad people are enjoying that, the photo album from last summer. All right, thanks again for calling, and say hi to everybody in Australia for us.
No problem at all.
All right.
See you later.
Good night. And that's going to do it for us here on this particular edition of Off the Wall. We're out of time. Boy, we could do this for hours, couldn't we? It's great to know people are out there all around the world. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com. See you next week. Tomorrow night on Off the Hook, there's a fundraiser, so if you're feeling generous, please give us a call at that radio station. Otherwise, we'll see you here again next week. Stay tuned for the blues. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.